Market Music with Fairbairn and Russell.
Welcome to the Market Musing podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. And after a couple of weeks of pretty unpleasantness in the markets, the start of this week seems to be more of a welcome sight. So I don't know, perhaps we've hit the bottom. There certainly seems to be some better news on the virus front, but I don't want to relax too much just yet. Today on the podcast, we would like to welcome another guest on. He's joining us all the way from Australia, and he's here to talk to us about that yellow metal that's very hot at the moment. And it's Craig Moulton, the Managing Director of Cobra Resources. Good morning, or maybe for you, Craig, good afternoon.
Yeah, g'day, Mark. How are you going?
I'm good. And you, how are you getting on?
Yeah, no, well, thank you. I've in mandatory isolation at the minute, having come back from South Australia, but been very busy, so all good.
Yeah, good. So are you managing to work from home, and you're getting on with your family? You haven't fallen out yet or anything like that?
Yeah, no, it's all been fine. I've already been set up to work from home anyway, and okay. My wife's in the medical industry, so she is out of the home, which is probably a good thing.
Yeah, okay.
For her sake, that is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, so what are you sort of working on at the moment then with Cobra? What's going on?
Oh, look, we've been flat out. I mean, coming back from the field's always a busy time. So, whether it's getting all the assays sent to the lab and getting all the data verified. Hmm. Plus, it's obviously corporately, it's a fairly busy time of the year with accounts needing to be published and AGMs within, sight, et cetera. So always plenty to do, very busy time.
Good.
Yep. So the company's managing to function okay, Craig, with the coronavirus situation and the interstate lockdowns that are going on in Australia at the moment?
Yeah, we are. So we flew out to Woodna, I think it was on about the 17th of March, and at the time there was still interstate travel allowed. We were also a little concerned because things changed very quickly during that period. I've got to say, though, being at Woodna was a great place to be, 600 kilometres out of Adelaide in the bush or on farmland, and felt very safe. So we completed the stage two sampling program, and then pretty much just after we got back, all the state borders started to close. So it was good timing. We managed to get all that work done, and now we've got some time to actually process those results and start interpreting them, which would be good.
Yeah, and the labs are still functioning over there, Craig?
Yeah, they are. There's obviously been some changes in terms of, some people working from home, but that seems to be mostly, the accounting and admin side of the business. The actual analytics side of the labs still seems to be functioning at this stage.
Oh, well, that's good news for the company. Just moving away from Cobra for a few moments, I wonder if you could just tell us a bit about yourself. What was the mad decision in your life to become a geologist? I sometimes think geologists are a bit like goalkeepers in a football team. They're one of a breed. So maybe if you could, just for our listeners, just to give a bit of background and your career and etc.
Look, I've got to say, I had an interest in rocks and geology from an early age. I remember going to Kalgoorlie, which is obviously the large gold mining district out of Perth here in Western Australia. And I remember as a kid actually going down one of the underground gold mines and just being absolutely fascinated about the whole process and just in rocks generally from a young age. But funnily enough, when I went to university, I actually started studying computer science, and that was, this was in the late 80s, early 90s, so computers were a relatively new thing back then, certainly personal computers were. And I got through first year university, and actually my girlfriend at the time was studying geology, so I thought, I'll go and sit in some of her lectures, and I just absolutely loved it, fell in love with it, and realised that was far more interesting than the computer science that I was doing. And the following year, I changed my course, and the rest is history, so they say. Went on to do an honours degree in geology, and absolutely loved it.
All right, and then where did you go from university?
So I was actually fortunate. I started with CRA Exploration, so that's Conzinc Rio Tinto, of course, now known as Rio Tinto Exploration. So I started with them as a graduate. And, you know, that was a fantastic company to start working with, the resources and effort and training that was put into, you know, young geologists was fantastic. I did a couple of years in their exploration group. And then actually went and lived in Parabadoo for 5 years in the iron ore mines up in the Pilbara. So worked as in various roles, mine geologist, resource geologist up in the, you know, some of the biggest world-class iron ore projects up there. Absolutely amazing place to learn geology, not only, you know, exploration geology, but also actually be able to see it in three dimensions, which is for a geologist is not something we get to do every day. So that was a fantastic time. And also understand the economics of what makes a mine work as well. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important.
Yeah.
So what, any particular rocks interest you more than others, Craig?
Oh, no, I'm fairly agnostic when it comes to rocks. I think they're all loved equally.
Okay.
No, I mean, it's an interesting question. I've seen lots of different deposits. I mean, been to, you know, mines in Borneo, worked over there for a little while. So, you know, everything, which was gold. You know, you see sort of been to some large gold porphyry operations. You know, they're all fascinating in terms of their formation, the chemistry and everything and how it all sort of works together. And, you know, it's an interesting fact. I mean, geological systems are probably the second most complex systems that we deal with in a certain context. I mean, they say that most of the computing power in the world typically used for predicting, or the most complex ones at least, the big supercomputers for predicting weather systems.
Yeah.
But, you know, second to that is really geological systems, and they are very diverse, so all very, very fascinating.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? You know what? I need to do some it's always interested me, but when I was younger at school, geography, I should have put more focus on my studies, really. But I need to find a good resource or something, because I'd love to understand more about how these rock formations are formed and what determines, you know, how they deposit themselves. It's a fascinating subject.
Yeah, Mark, there's actually a good series on YouTube called Sprott 101. I think it's 13 hours.
Good.
We'll perhaps put that link up at the with the podcast as well. But I've watched a few episodes of that, and it's really, really good.
Okay.
So sorry for butting in. Mark, continue.
Oh no! All I was just going to do is move on to the rocks that Cobra are involved with. Is it gold? Is that right, Craig?
Yeah, absolutely. So it is a gold project, hydrothermal gold. So. You know, we see a lot of granite rocks, the Hilltarpa Sweet granites, particularly one of the main sort of sources of heat and metal in that project. Once again, massive scale. I mean, you're talking about the same rocks that formed the Olympic Dam deposit, which is absolutely a massive, you know, world class deposit. It's only 300 kilometres to the northeast of Wudna. You know, we. Without trying to get too technical, I guess, I mean, the sort of rocks that we see there are granites and granodiorites and what we call felsic rocks, so the typically the lighter colour rocks without less iron magnesium in them. But then, of course, we're looking for the fluids and everything that come off those rocks, because they ultimately carry the gold. And they have their own alteration signatures and everything else, and that's, you know, all of the geochemistry that we've been putting out in some of our announcements is really trying to actually, you know, narrow that down, understand it, fingerprint it, so that we can actually see the expression of those rocks and then and their the alteration that's related to them, the intrusion of those rocks in the weathering profile.
Excellent. So before we come on to the Wudna project, Craig, can you just give us, you know, how did you end up at Cobra? What was the
So I mean, maybe just to step back a little bit, I mean, if I've worked for three large companies in my career. I started with Rio Tinto. I was with them for over 16 years, both in the iron ore group, but also worked for the Copper Projects Group in Vancouver. I then went on to work for Cliffs Natural Resources, as it was at the time. I think it's gone back to being called Cleveland Cliffs now. And ran an exploration group in Asia Pacific. So I spent a lot of time in places like Mongolia, setting up businesses there and investing in and running exploration farm-ins. A fascinating place, actually. If you ever get the opportunity to go to Mongolia, you've got to do it. It's they're amazing people, and it's an amazing country. One of the few, geologically particularly, one of the few places where it is so underexplored, and you can still go out into, you know, virgin territory. It's incredible. After that, I did a master's in mineral economics. Understanding the geology, its formation, but also understanding the economics is a key part of all of that. So that interests me too. And then, so really the role with Cobra is all about bringing everything together, the technical, the commercial, the financial, and the interplay of those, and being able to drive a project that I feel very passionate about, work with some really clever technical people and commercial people. And it's, I've got to say, it's a privilege to work for Cobra. I really enjoy it.
Good stuff. Just that's moving nicely on to Wodina. Just for, in case nobody knows about the Wodina Gold Project, could you give us a brief overview, Craig?
Yeah, so the Wodina Gold Project is located in South Australia near a town called Wodina. It's about 6 hours, just over a 6 hour drive from Adelaide in South Australia. It's a partially a farming town, and the rest is basically bush. It was initially discovered by Newcrest in the late 1990s, and has been managed since then by a company called, it's now called Andromeda Metals, was originally Adelaide Resources. And so we're farming into the project. We've got the right to earn 75%. They previously defined a gold resource of 211,000 ounces across three deposits. These deposits, open pit gold, it's non-refractory, relatively shallow. We've got some really good high-grade mineralization there. We've had intercepts up to 97 grams per tonne. And there is a large number of prospects in the tenements. The tenements, you know, about 80 kilometres wide. There's 2,000 square kilometres of ground there. And, you know, we currently have about 22 targets beyond the existing what we call brownfield resources or existing resources that we are looking to actively explore. So great project.
Yeah, it seems very scalable. I've done a bit of digging into the project in the past, and some of the statements coming from Andromeda, well, it was a target and it's a 1 million ounces potential.
Yeah, I think that's it. You know, I've got to be a little bit careful what I say, but from a scale perspective, absolutely. I mean, it wouldn't be hard to see the potential for several million ounces. I mean, that's just a view. That's certainly the sort of scale we're aiming for.
Yeah, like you said, the sort of calcrete anomaly is about 60 kilometres by 20 kilometres. Old footprint, so it is. Just obviously the company released an RNS yesterday, and you can give us an overview, but I'm also really interested in this ADI funding and what this means for the company going forward potentially.
Sure. So just quickly, I mean, the announcement yesterday was about the completion of the Stage 2 sampling program. And just for any listeners that aren't familiar with that story, so the Stage 1 program was all about calibrating mineralization, calcrete with mineralization that we saw in the ground. And that was incredibly successful. We came up with this mineralization fingerprint, which was basically five elements that we know characterize the mineralization in the bedrock. And that's really important because it will then feed into all of the exploration work we do. We can now differentiate between a gold anomaly we see in soils, one that would be just alluvial gold versus one that's actually telling us that there is gold mineralization in basement. So, and then stage two is all about increasing our sample coverage over all of the brownfield resources so that we can apply that technique and start to look at extensions of those existing resources. So apologies, that's what stage one and stage two were about. That's okay. Now we're just waiting for those assays. Now the ADI funding is also really interesting. You know, when I talk to investors, I typically talk about three things: brownfields, which I've just been covering; greenfields, which is these 22 projects, all of which could be the same sort of scale as the existing resources we have. The third one I talk about is blue sky. Now, blue sky, we have a new target. In fact, we've got four new targets that we've just identified, and these are known as IOCG targets. I don't know if it's a term that most of your listeners will be familiar with, but IOCG stands for iron oxide, copper, gold. And the best example, there's several in South Australia, but the best example would be the BHP's Olympic Dam. But also Oz Minerals, Carrapateena, for example, they're all big world-class IOCG deposits. Now, we have identified four targets in our project area that we believe are absolutely high priority for IOCG-type mineralization. And this is different because it's not in an area that's been previously identified as having IOCG potential. We put in an application to the South Australian government earlier this year, and that's run by the Department of Energy and Minerals, which is the mines department, if you like, in South Australia. Now, they provide funding up to 50% of the direct exploration costs for projects where you've defined a new approach or a new understanding, a new genetic model, for example. And so they approved the round one funding application that we put in. So we are now into the stage two. We've been asked and have submitted a stage two application. So we're still waiting to hear ultimately the outcome of that. But if that's successful, that could provide up to $250,000 in funding towards an exploration program specifically focused on these new IOCG deposit targets. So very exciting.
Yeah, so that's going to cover about, you know, half a drilling program potentially.
Yeah, for those IOCG targets, it will definitely, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, oh, good news. I actually missed that yesterday in the RNS, so it was good to for you to explain that.
All right, you'll have to sign up to our announcements page on our website so you can email it to you.
Yeah, okay, we'll do it.
So I remember, Craig, we at an event a while ago now, we were talking and you mentioned you were going to buy a drone to do some aerial filming or get some shots of the project. And I just wondered if you'd done that and how you were getting on with it.
Yeah, look, so I think that was at one of the Share Talk events in London.
It was,
Nearly a year ago now. I did end up buying the drone and have had so it was Mavic drone, Mavic Pro 2, I think they call it.
Yeah.
We took it out during the initial stage one calibration program and got some amazing footage. We'll be starting to build some presentations off the back of that, or some videos rather, that we can put on the website and give people a good understanding. It's an amazing technology, I've got to say. Because as a non-technical sort of drone person, at least, they're very, very easy to use.
Oh yeah, no, they are very easy. I mean, I've been into model flying since I was about 11 or 12 years old, and as technology's moved on, I ended up putting cameras in fixed-wing aircraft and autopilot systems to stabilize them, and I was flying them around using goggles, which was amazing. And I've got my own drone. I don't find the drones as fun to fly as planes because they kind of fly themselves. There's not really anything to do. But from a media perspective, because obviously that's what I do for my living, I create, you know, videos, etc. You can get some absolutely stunning shots, and it's amazing, isn't it? Just how easy it is to use, and they're safe as well. You know, if you get into trouble, they'll just come back to you and land.
Absolutely. I mean, a couple of things on that. So one is the first time we tried to launch it, it just comes up and says, "Oh no, you can't launch this here because you're within, I think, 10 kilometers of an airport." So we had to go and move further down the road.
Yeah, sure.
But they, you know, it literally won't let you fly, or at least how I operate it anyway. It won't let you fly it in areas you're not supposed to, which is great. The thing that I really loved about it was we were doing some vehicle tracking work just to show the vehicle going through the exploration areas, and you can literally lock it onto the vehicle. You can drive. Not only does it track the vehicle, and so you can capture that footage, which looks great, But as the vehicle moves around a corner, it will actually anticipate that, and it comes around and does a side shot. So it actually cuts the corner, which just looks fantastic. I mean, what you can do with a drone now, it would have cost you thousands and thousands of dollars from a helicopter, only 10 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Their technology is incredible. How small they've made the gyros and all that stuff is just amazing. But I do look forward to seeing that, because it would be something to aim for as well when I get out again with mine and see who can get the nicer shots.
Now, one of these days we'll have to get you up to Australia and you're going to come out and have a look at the project. That'd be great.
No, I'd love to do that. I'd absolutely love to do that. It'd be great.
Okay, Craig, just before we hit you with our 60-second challenge, could you just give our listeners a sort of, I know it's hard to give a roadmap for 2020, obviously with the coronavirus situation.
Sure.
You can give me an ideal roadmap if things were normal, if you want.
Funnily enough, I mean, our plans haven't changed dramatically. Although that being said, we're at the mercy of obviously the travel restrictions, and until they're lifted, there's nothing that we can do. But in terms of field work, of course. That being said, our plans haven't really changed. We always said from last November, we said we were going to do a three-stage program. We've completed the first two stages of that soil sampling program. So we will look to do the third stage. After that, second half of 2020 was always going to be focused on drilling our highest priority targets. So some of that may change. We may look at rolling straight into drilling rather than doing the stage three. I don't know. We'll have to consider that. It really depends on how long this situation continues for. But at this stage, the program that we were focused on really hasn't changed dramatically. We're really keen during the second half of 2020 to get out and start drilling some of these targets and really show the potential of the project.
Yeah, and I believe some of your drilling contractors is taking shares in lieu of payment as well.
Yeah, look, we signed an agreement with Hagstrom Drilling. Paul Musker from Hagstrom has been a great supporter of the project. He's got a large drilling company here in Perth. And so he's very supportive. So not only is it an equity agreement, so in other words, the drilling cost, a third or 33% of the drilling cost will be paid in shares, but also it's a fixed price contract. Now, for a junior exploration company like Cobra, that's really important because it really limits our risk in terms of the drilling cost. So both of those things become really important. It also, by having an equity agreement, means that we can obviously expand or spread our drilling budget further and get more drilling for our dollar or for our pound. So that's really great, really exciting. It also shows that, Paul's obviously involved in the exploration mining industry solely as part of his business. And so he understands a quality project and is prepared to invest in Cobra as well.
Yeah, obviously there's upside for him as well, if it's a major success. So, well, that's good. Okay, Mark, do you want to hit Craig with the 60-second challenge?
Yeah, so if you're up for it, Craig, what we tend to do is just set a little timer going, just keep an eye on the nearest clock, for 60 seconds, and it's your chance to pitch Cobra to our listeners, why you think that Cobra is a worthy investment, if you're up for that.
I am. I guess one of the few times I don't really have to apologise for my dogs barking in the background from being at home, but...
Okay, that's what that is, your dogs, yeah.
Yeah, somebody's just come to the front door. But absolutely, let's do it.
Okay, right, so I'll count you down from three. So, 3, 2, 1, take it away.
Okay, so Cobra Resources is a main board listed company. We have assets in Woodner in South Australia. It's a gold project. There are five reasons why I believe Cobra is a really sound investment. One is quality. We have a quality project located in a high-grade fertile gold system and has plenty of scale to develop potentially a new gold field. Copper represents great value. We have the right to earn 75% in an existing resource base, 211,000 ounces, and we've got an incredibly low enterprise value. The mineralization is high grade and significant width. We already have three brownfields deposits, and we really have the scale to double or triple those resources. We have 22 greenfield prospects, and you know those prospects could easily deliver us an order of magnitude increase in our resource base. I think we're incredibly innovative. Mm-hmm. We've both developed and applied industry-leading science, which provides us pathways to mineralization and industry-leading target selection. Mm-hmm. And then we've also got Blue Sky. So we have these new ICG targets that we've just recently announced to the market, and that has the potential to transform the company into a major mining house.
Good. Okay, a minute 30. So not too bad, not too bad. Nice little summary of the company there.
There you go.
Perfect, perfect.
Okay. Well, unless there's anything else from you, Kenny, or Craig, if you want to mention anything, I think we've had a good chat there for just under half an hour.
Look, no, thank you. Appreciate your time. I hope everybody's, and certainly people listening to this, stay safe. And it's a difficult time at the moment.
Yeah.
But I'm sure we'll all get through it.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll all get through it. Everyone I think is stuck at home, it'll go away, and hopefully we can all go back to our sort of normal lives fairly soon, and return to some sort of normality.
Mm, indeed.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for your time, Craig. We'll let you get back to your. Well, it's just 6 o'clock at night nearly now, I think.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that, guys, and I look forward to seeing the podcast.
Thank you, Craig.
Cheers, guys. Take care.
See you. Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Hopefully, if you can tune in next time, we'll be going back to the UK, but talking about another gold project in Australia, as we'll be having Craig Brown on from ECR Minerals. Tune in next time.